don't really think he needs an introduction, but Bud is coming to share with us, and I just appreciate it. I was wanting to take as much of the week off as I could to have some fun, and so I just appreciate Bud being willing to come and speak this morning, and let's just pray for him. Lord, I just thank you for Bud. I thank you for his heart, and God, just the many things you brought him through, and God, his faithfulness in walking with you and serving you. And I just pray, Lord, that as he shares this morning, I know this is something that he's not used to doing, but I just pray, God, that you would just bring strength and clarity, and that his heart and his mind would be at peace, and he'd be able to share the things that you've spoken to him. In Jesus' name, amen. Go for it.
Thank you, Paul. Man, I struggled this week. I really asked, Lord, what is my testimony? Like, what could I possibly say? What could I share that matters? Like, who am I? And I really felt, he said to me, this is your testimony. You're standing up here. That's your testimony. So, man, I put some notes down, and every time I try to put it together, it comes out different. And I said the other day that I asked Paul how long I had, and he said, what, 30 minutes, 20, 30 minutes? I said, oh, that's good. I've got it down to about 2 hours. And Don said, don't worry about it. I'll bring snacks for everybody. So don't worry about missing lunch. You can all just move over to Don. She'll feed you. So I really felt, as I was looking back, that there's small portions of our life that define who we are, that maybe set our identity. Some good, some not so good. And so, I mean, if you come up and you're introduced yourself to me for the first time, we shake hands and I say, how do you do? I'm Bud Sadian. And you say, so, are you from Maple Creek, Bud? I say, no, I live here, but I was born and raised in Nova Scotia. I'm Nova Scotian. And I was thinking about, because I say that all the time, I'm from Nova Scotia, I'm a Nova Scotian, I was born and raised. I'm 67 years old. I lived in Nova Scotia for less than 4 years of my life. I've lived in Saskatchewan for 43 years. So, I'm Nova Scotian. So it's small things, right? And we settle on those, and they speak to us, and they say who we are. And like I said, sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not so good. No, being from Nova Scotia, that's good. But in my younger days, I come from a very dysfunctional family, incredibly. Alcoholism was something that ran rampant. My grandfather was a raging alcoholic when he came back from the Second World War. My father was a raging alcoholic. And I was well on my way to joining them, carrying on that family tradition. I struggled with rejection. All through my life. I never was really sure why. I mean, God has shown me, and he's brought me healing, but where did it come from? Where did this rejection come from? I had walls around my heart so thick. He brought a very special lady into my life. And he used her to tear down those walls. Boy, that wasn't an easy battle. You know what? None of this is even in my notes. I remember as a 5-year-old, we'd come back from Germany, living in New Brunswick, and I was shipped off to live with my grandparents for a year. Now, at the time, I think that was probably a wise decision by my parents because I was way too smart for my own good at 5, and they figured I needed to be in school. So they sent me to Nova Scotia because they had kindergarten, which they didn't have in New Brunswick. But at 5 years old, I didn't understand that. I just knew I was being shipped away. And I think that was maybe where it started, rejection. When I was 9, my parents got divorced. My mother left, took my older sister, left me and my younger sister behind. When I look back now, I go, well, that was probably a smart decision. She couldn't look after all of us. But at 9, I didn't understand that. At 15, 16, I couldn't stay in my father's house anymore. Couldn't stand the constant anger and bitterness that we were both struggling with. We fought constantly. Actually, he fought. I just tried to defend. So I left because I didn't belong. I didn't belong anywhere. I went from one friend's house to another friend's house. I slept in cars. I slept wherever. I was in grade 10. Coming towards the end of the school year, and I remember distinctly walking down the hall in the school, and a guidance counselor grabbing me by the scruff of the neck and saying, "Mr. Sabian, this cannot continue. You're sleeping through classes, your marks are plummeting, and you are basically on the road to destruction." I was into drugs, I was into booze, and it wasn't pretty. And he said, "You've got to go home." And I said, "I will never go back to my father's house." So he got a hold of my mother in Nova Scotia. We were living in Calgary at the time. Got a hold of my mother in Nova Scotia. I hadn't spoke to her in 6 years. My father had convinced me that I had a new family with him and my stepmother, and that I should cut off all ties with my mother. And so I did. And really wasn't that hard because I never ever got a letter or anything from her. Or so I thought. Found out years later that my father would just mark return to sender on them and send them all back and never told me. So again, I struggled with that rejection because, I mean, she hasn't contacted me in 6 years. She didn't care. So I was quite surprised when I talked to her, when the counselor got a hold of her on the phone, and I said, you know, do you think it would be all right if I came to Nova Scotia and live with you? I know. Kind of took her by surprise. She didn't even know what to say. She said, "Yes, Alan, absolutely." And I said, okay, well, as soon as I get the money together, I'll buy a plane ticket and I'll come to Nova Scotia. And she said, why? Yeah, super. I don't remember the exact conversation. I do know that when she hung up the phone, my stepfather said to her, what were you thinking? Why didn't you tell him you will buy him a plane ticket? So fortunately for me, my mother had a cousin who was fairly high up in the RCMP. She got a hold of him, got a hold of the police in Calgary, actually RCMP detachment, and they got a hold of me. And the next day, I was on a plane to Nova Scotia. Verse in Genesis chapter 50. Joseph's brothers are coming to him. Their father has died, and now they're worried that he's going to retaliate and get even with them for the pain they brought on him. And he said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. And I believe, and I know, the enemy was alive and well in my life. And what he intended to use for harm, God used for good. He pulled me out a not good situation and sent me home to Nova Scotia to live with my mom, my stepfather, and my two sisters. And that probably, well, definitely put me back on a path that God had for me. I believe it wholeheartedly today. I didn't know it then. I didn't know God. My mother said she sent us to church, to Sunday school as kids, but I think she's mixed up. I think she was thinking about my sisters, because I never went to Sunday school. I don't ever remember going to church, except for once in my life. And that was my grandmother took me and had me dedicated or baptized or whatever they did when you were a kid, and they sprinkle a little water on your head. And I remember my grandfather, as soon as they sprinkled the water, he's up, gone. I thought, right on, I'm out of here. I went to follow him. Nope, Grandma wouldn't let me. But that, I think that was the only day I ever went to church. It's the only one I remember as a child. I remember my teenage years dating a girl whose mom went to church, and so, you know, you got to impress the parents. So I went a couple of times. But I didn't know God. Nothing to do with him. So I love the passage in Jeremiah where he says, I know the plans I have for you. Plans to prosper. Plans for good. And he had plans for me. I know that today. So I was in Nova Scotia for a couple of years. Economic circumstances, my parents lost their jobs, so they had to move. And so they decided, well, they were offered jobs at the new plant in Halifax, about 2 hours away. But I mean, one sister was graduating. I was in grade 12, going into grade 12, and they knew that I was going to be leaving too. So they decided, if we're going to move, let's move out west, because that's probably where our kid's going to end up anyway. So we headed for Alberta, back to my old stomping grounds. Started out in Edmonton, and then after 6 months, we moved down into Calgary again. So back where I started. Hooked up with a lot of the old friends that I hung out with before. Started getting back into the same cycles, same issues and problems. But God had a better plan for me. He really did. Because one day I was sitting in my parents' kitchen, and I had a cousin who lived with us, and she was dating a guy across the street from Saskatchewan. And this boyfriend asked my cousin, he says, I got this friend who lives here in Calgary, she needs to learn to drive. Would you mind giving her driving lessons? My cousin says, sure, I can do that. So for whatever reason, they had to stop at our house that morning. She forgot something, needed to pick something up, I don't remember. She brought this cute little blonde with the biggest blue eyes. I think I fell in love instantly. So a couple days later, my cousin says to me, remember that girl that we brought over to the house? I said, yeah. She says, well, she's moving. She said, would you mind helping us move her? And I said, no, not a problem. Be happy to. So we went and we got her all moved. And we're driving back home. And they're going to drop me off first. And just before I get out of the vehicle, Cheryl turns to them and says, I've got spaghetti. Would you guys like to come for supper? To my cousin and her boyfriend. Doesn't invite me. I go, yep. There you go. That's the end of that romance. I've been rejected. Like, man, shot down, crashed, and burned. So, not a big deal. The next day, my cousin's talked to me, and she says, you know, you should call Cheryl. I think she likes you. I said, yeah, I don't think so. But the Lord has better plans, right? So I phoned her and asked her out, and she said yes. And that was like April. We were married in October. And yeah, I knew a good thing when I seen it. So we lived in Calgary for about 2 years after we were married. And we actually went to Nova Scotia on our honeymoon. The day we arrived, my grandmother passed away, my father's mother. So we went to the funeral. My father was there. It's the first time I'd seen him in 6-7 years, something like that. Cordial. It's a funeral. I'm not going to fight in the funeral. And so we parted, and that's no big deal. About, oh, be a year and a half later, Cheryl was big pregnant with our daughter, so in late 81, early 82, so we've been married a couple of years. We were visiting my stepsister. And my dad arrived. And I don't know what brought it on. I don't even remember the conversation. But he cursed me. He spoke over me a cursing that I struggled with for the next 30 years. And man, if you don't believe there's power in our tongue, we can speak life or death over people. And he spoke death into me that day. And I struggled with it terribly. But God has a better plan. Because it was, our daughter was born, I don't know, a month or two later. But basically, Cheryl and I had bought a half a duplex in Calgary when we got married. And people that lived in the other side come to us and said, we want to move and we want to sell our duplex. And the real estate agent says if we could sell both sides, somebody would probably buy it for an investment and it'd be a lot easier to sell. Well, Cheryl and I went, our daughter was not quite a year old. We're thinking, we don't want to raise kids in Calgary. We talked about maybe moving. So, but okay, it seems like a good idea. So we listed our side as well. It ended up not selling with that real estate agent, but the day went off the market, another real estate agent phoned us and said, I can sell your house in 24 hours. You list with me for 24 hours, I'll sell your place. Well, it turned out, in a roundabout way, the reason he knew he was going to sell it was because he was going to buy it as an investment. So, which was fine. So we sold. We did all right. We did pretty good, actually. And I honestly believe that was a God moment, because that was 1982, and for all those of you that remember the early 80s, I mean, everything crashed shortly after that. I think midsummer of 82, stock market crashed, the housing market crashed, interest rates went to like 20%. And people in Calgary were walking out of their houses because they couldn't afford to make the payments. And here we walked away with a nice chunk of change in our pocket. So we moved to Saskatchewan. Now, if you've ever watched the series The Chosen, when they start, there's all those fish swimming through the water, and then one turns around and is going the other way, and a few more join it. That was Cheryl and I. I mean, in the 80s, 70s and 80s, well, even a large part right up till today, Saskatchewan's biggest export has been its people, all its young people. We ship them west to Alberta, right? And here we are, going the other way, leaving Alberta, a land of opportunity, going to Saskatchewan. Didn't even have a job. But we bought a little acreage, a little house. We had enough money to pay cash for it. So no mortgage at 22 years of age. So the first couple of years we struggled. It was hard. Trying to find work. And fortunately, my wife worked, and I struggled. We built a lawn to our house, and we borrowed money for that. And I even went back to Calgary looking for work. We just both chucked it in. And then her brother got a contract with the government, cutting snowmobile trails and cross-country ski trails. And so he called me. He says, come home. Come back to Saskatchewan. Come to work. So I did. And through that, partially because of that, an opening came available on the fire crew at Provincial Park. And because I'd done a reasonable job, I guess, on the cutting trails and stuff, they hired me. And I thought, okay, well, it's not a bad job. I mean, it's only 20, 22 weeks a year, but at least it'll give me something to do until I decide what I want to be when I grow up. So for the next 37 years, I was still struggling to decide what I wanted to be when I grew up. But I enjoyed it. It was a good career. I went to school, I think 14 years, counting kindergarten. I liked grade 11 so much, I went twice. But I went to like 11 different schools. So I remember telling my wife, you know, you decide where you want to live and where we're going to raise our kids. Because once they start school, we're not moving, ever. And so we didn't. We stayed in Porcupine Plains, Saskatchewan, Cheryl's hometown, until our kids graduated, moved on, whatever. And I remember I was working one day. By this time, I was working 8-9 months of the year for the government, firefighting and whatever. And I remember getting called in early that year. They called me back to work early in February because they were doing some remodeling and boss knew I did renovations. And so I would travel an hour to work every day and then an hour home. So I take my bag lunch, and everybody else lived or worked right there, and so they would go home for lunch. So one of the secretaries said to me, Bud, you want me to leave my computer on for you? You can sit at my desk and play solitaire over lunch hour if you want. I said, oh, sure. Something to do. That was before cell phones, right? So I remember distinctly sitting down at her desk one day, and I'd been working probably 2-3 weeks already. And there's a clipboard. As I'm sitting looking at the computer screen, there's a clipboard on the wall right here. This is in the spring of 2003. And I should mention that we're living in Porcupine Plain, Greenwater Lake Provincial Park, which is the oasis of Saskatchewan, if you're into hunting and fishing. And anybody that knows me knows I dream and live for hunting and fishing. So if you'd have asked me that morning, are you willing to move? I would have said, not a chance. I will never leave Porcupine Point. So I look at the clipboard hanging on the wall that day, and it's a job application, job posting for a fire-based supervisor position in Cypress Hills, 9 months of the year. I'm already working 8-9 months of the year. Do I really want to move all the way across Saskatchewan just for basically the same job, because I'm already doing the fire-based supervisor position? And so I was talking to one of my coworkers, and he said, you know, if you're serious about moving up, you need to get experience doing job interviews, because you've been working for the government for 20 years and you haven't done one. So he said, just because you apply doesn't mean you have to take the job if they offer it to you. So I thought, okay, so I threw my hat in the ring, so to speak, sent down my resume, got an interview, had to drive to Swift Current for the interview, did okay on the interview, and the guy doing the interview would be my future boss. He says to me, and I knew him, we'd fought fire together. He said, so Bud, he said, if I offer you this job, are you going to take it? I said, no. I said, I'll be honest with you. I just wanted the interview experience. He said, oh, okay. I said, it just doesn't make sense for me to move across the province for a job that's the same as what I've got. And he says, if I make it year-round, will you come? And I said, you make it year-round, I'll move to Maple Creek, Cypress Hills. So he said, I'll let you know next month at the spring convention. I said, okay. So I drove into the parking lot. I hadn't even had my door closed, and they come running across the parking lot. But it's year round. So I remember, this time I still had no cell phones, but I did have a bag phone in my truck. So I phoned my wife and I said, we're moving. We're moving to Maple Creek. I sort of expected her to tell me to go pound sand, but she said, if that's what you want to do, then I'll be with you. I support you. For I know the plans that I have for you. So we loaded up the truck and we moved to Beverly or Cypress Hills. No movie stars, no swimming pools, but well, I guess we have swimming pools. And I should mention that my wife grew up in a Lutheran church family. Her grandfather was a pastor. And we attended the Lutheran church in Porcupine Plain all the years we lived there, served on the board, did all that. But I still didn't know God. I mean, it's just, you went to church because that's what you're supposed to do. It's good for your kids. Well, every excuse that I could find not to go, I'm out of here. We asked our pastor up there, is there a Lutheran church in Maple Creek? No, I don't think so. So if you knew the house we moved into, originally on Wall Street, at that time the corner lot across the street was vacant. If you looked out our living room window, you were looking right at the Lutheran church. Never seen it. My wife met a lady by the name of Charlene Olson who invited her to come to church with her. Pentecostal Assembly of God. And I think my wife attended church for 2 months. People were starting to think her husband was a figment of her imagination. Because I was up north on fires, and I was working weekends, whatever. I was never around to go to church. Probably worked at it to make sure. Anyway, one day my wife says, "Will you come to church with me this morning?" I said, "Sure, whatever." So we walked into this building, and this part wasn't on. It was the old sanctuary. And there was a row right next to the door, and I grabbed a seat so I could make a quick exit. And so they started and singing, and people were dancing and waving their arms, and there was a lady up front with flags, and the pastor was jumping up and down with kids, and I'm going, these people are all nuts. They're crazy. I'm out of here. But I remember pastor and his wife inviting us for lunch. And you know what? They seemed pretty normal once you get talking to them. And then another couple, Millie and Emil Siegel, invited us another time. And then Maddie and Bill Widmer invited us another time. And Blair and Leanne Brost invited us another time. Gerald and Janice Sanderson. And we got to know, and I mean, it's a family. There's a reason this church is called Family Church today, because it was definitely a family. And we started attending, and we enjoyed church. I mean, it's church, right? Still didn't know God. Then one day my wife comes home and she says, "There's a seminar at the church this weekend. Would you go with me?" I said, "What kind of a seminar?" She said, "Well, it's called Ancient Paths. It's an inner healing seminar." I don't need inner healing. I'm not going to that. Are you crazy? And then she looks at me with her big baby blue eyes. Please. And so I didn't want to go. Yeah, it's Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday. Are you kidding me? In church? Okay, I'll go with you. I know the plans that I have for you. That was, remember those little defining moments? That weekend was life-changing for me. I think I spent most of it bawling my eyes out. God became incredibly real to me. He showed me in vivid pictures where he'd been all those times. He showed me the night my mom left. I mean, they had a terrible fight that night, and she walked out, and I was hiding behind the couch. I was scared to death. And he showed me a picture of me behind the couch. Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, kneeling over me, protecting me. He was there. You don't see something like that without it changing your life. He worked quite literally a miracle in me that weekend. Now, I'd like to say that was the end of it, but it took a little longer. I'm kind of stubborn. Most of us Nova Scotians are. I strongly felt that I needed to go. No, I didn't. God strongly felt that I needed to go forgive my father. Or at least that's what I thought he felt. I didn't feel that. I didn't feel that at all. So ancient past level one, then ancient past level two, then blessing generations, then empowering relationships, and then overcoming anger. These are all seminars we attended. At every time, God would do something. I describe it like an onion. He just keeps peeling the layers off, right? Get to the heart. And he worked, and he worked, and he worked on me. And he kept saying, "You need to go see your father." And I kept saying, "No, I'm pretty sure I don't." But I have a wife who maybe hears from God better than even I do. Well, I know she hears from God better than I do. And he told her he needs to go see his father. And she kept after me, kept after me. So finally I picked up the phone and I phoned and it was busy. And she says, "Okay, well, phone back. I'll wait a few minutes." The phone back, no answer. I said, "Ah. See, they got one of those phones that says who's calling. And he's seen my name and he won't answer." And my wife says, "Call again." So I did. And he answered. Actually, stepmother answered. And so I talked to her a little bit and I talked to my dad. I said, "Well, I'll come see you." And he said, "Well, that would be awesome." So we made plans to meet. We drove to Calgary. I went to see him. But God had shown me that it wasn't about me forgiving my father. It was about me asking my father to forgive me. Because while he wasn't perfect, I was far from it. And an awful lot of what I went through, especially in my teenager years, I brought on myself. Because I was a rotten kid, pure and simple. Bible tells us, honor your mother and father. I dishonored them in every chance I could get. I rejected them. So I did. I asked my father and my son, "Did you forgive me? I was not a nice person. I know that." And they did. And we actually ended up staying overnight. Had a really nice visit. We left. We're driving home. And I said to Cheryl, "That was awesome." I said, "But he never took back the curse. He cursed me. He told me I would never amount to anything. And he never took that back." "For I know the plans I have for you," said the Lord. We weren't home maybe an hour, maybe not even an hour. It wasn't very long. The phone rang. It's my father. "Bud, forgive me. I want you to know how proud I am of you. What a wonderful man you've become. And that was like 1,000 pounds came off my back. God knows. He knows. He knows what we want, our deepest, darkest desires. He knows what we need better than we know ourselves. That was 37 years after I left home, after I'd walked out of my father's house. 37 years. He'd missed. I was traveling with Pastor Paul here a couple weeks ago, and he asked me, I'm paraphrasing Paul, can't remember how you exactly put it, but basically, what did you miss? Separated from your father, the divorce and all that. What did you miss growing up? And I remember telling him, I didn't miss much, because I was fortunate. When I left my father, I went to live with my mother, my stepfather, who loved me. I mean, he was a wonderful man. He was a good example for a father figure, for a husband figure. He showed me. He wasn't perfect, but none of us are. Certainly not me. But I did miss. I did miss. I missed a father saying, good job. I missed a father speaking a blessing over me. One of the things we learned through ancient paths is the power of a blessing and how through life we need to hear that blessing. As a parent, you need to speak a blessing over your children at conception. Can't remember, there's 7 stages. Right up into old age, we need to have a blessing spoken over us. My father, my great-grandfather, was killed in the First World War at Passchendaele. My grandfather was 2 when his father went to war. He never came home. So he didn't have a good example. My grandfather went to war in the Second World War when my father was about 9. He came home when my father was about 13, something like that. And he's give or take a little bit. My father joined the army at 15. When my grandfather came home from the war, I think they would probably diagnose it today as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. He never worked again a day in his life. He was a raging alcoholic. Every time my father got together with his father, it was a war. My earliest Christmas memory is a frozen turkey going sailing across the kitchen. One threw it at the other. Yeah, a little bit dysfunctional. So there was no example, right? Well, there was an example, it just wasn't a very good one. So did I miss out? Absolutely, I did. But my father missed out. He missed out on grandchildren. He missed out on great-grandchildren. We got back together. I don't know how many years ago, 10, 12, something like that. And so we would get together with him once a year, twice a year maybe, not very often, because it was always an excuse. But I did form a relationship with my father. And I realized that I had taken the image of my earthly father and put that on God. My father was condemning. He was abusive. He was overly strict. And that's how I saw God. And it's taken me a lot of years to realize that God does have a better plan in my life. And he's brought incredible healing into me, definitely into my relationship with my wife, and in the relationship with my children, because I struggled with all of that until God worked a miracle in me that started that ancient path back in, 2005, 2006, somewhere in there. And I've been to probably 30 seminars since then, as a participant, as a facilitator, as a coordinator. And every time, God peels another layer off that onion. Every time he has another word for me, another bit of healing, whatever. So, sorry for the rambling. That's what I say. That's my testimony. I'm standing here today. That's my testimony. Because if you'd asked me 25 years ago, I'd have said, not a chance. Anyway, thank you for your time. I would like to close just with a reading of a psalm. This is Psalm 16. God gave it to me this morning. Keep me safe, my God, for in you I take refuge. I say to the Lord, you are my Lord. Apart from you, I have no good thing. I say of the holy people who are in the land, they are noble ones in whom is all my delight. Those who run after other gods will suffer more and more. I will not pour out libations of blood to such gods or take up their names on my lips. Lord, you alone are my portion and my cup. You make my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. I will praise the Lord who counsels me. Even at night my heart instructs me. I keep my eyes always on the Lord. With him at my right hand I will not be shaken. Therefore my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also.
Me with your joy in your presence, with the eternal pleasures at your right hand. And that's all God.